This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 3rd of August, 2022, and we're looking at a market that is trying to absorb a pretty considerable rise in Treasury yields yesterday. Some Fed speakers really pushing back against it seems that because it looked almost coordinated, these comments from everyone from Mester to Evans to Bullard, that Mester and Bullard of those two, of those three are voters, with comments essentially pushing back with where the market is pricing the Fed to be by the end of next year, specifically mentioning two of them, Evans and Bullard, the 3.75 to 4% range as appropriate forecast for where Fed rates will be end of 2023, and the market is still below 3% even after a considerable pop in yields yesterday. But oddly, Peter, I mean, there's been a little bit of a narrow and obsessive focus about Nancy Pelosi, U.S. House Speaker, and her plane and whether it was going to land in Taipei or not. There was something like 300,000 people tracking her plane route on one service I saw yesterday. But to me, this yield move, and if you look at the longer end of the yield curve, 20 basis points, 25 basis points, even off of the lows, we should see equities a little bit more challenged here. We challenged resistance, though, yet again in the NASDAQ 100, 13,000. It did push back again, push back a little bit lower, but we're not much changed on the day. So I guess we're both scratching our heads a bit here at this market.
Yeah, because as you showed yesterday, the relationship between high duration technology growth pockets and interest rates have been quite tightly correlated in this cycle. Yesterday's session was odd. I think to some extent, what is happening is that what could happen is that a lot of these growth pockets on any given random day could be driven more by retail investors than institutional flows. And I think a lot of retail traders or investors, they don't really look at the overall picture. They just go with narratives. And I saw yesterday a lot of meme stocks have been popping lately as well. So there's still a lot of shenanigans and stupid flows going on around the world. But otherwise, yesterday was just a noise day, and we're trading just below 4,100 in the S&P 500. I'm still leaning, and that's still my bet that these mean reversion dynamics I've talked about will kick in here in August. I still think this market will readjust itself lower, not in a dramatic fashion, but it will readjust itself lower. And then when we swing into September and the later part of the year, I think the action really will begin to heat up. But John, I want to steer the conversation on slide three towards the Pelosi's trip to Taiwan, because there is a lot of actions done by China. They have halted export of natural sand to Taiwan that just came in this morning. Obviously, a very, very key ingredient for chip manufacturing. So that could add a supply crunch to semiconductors if Taiwan will, can't get this natural sand, which is super, super important.
Well, apparently they can get the sand. Apparently, it's from other places. It's just very expensive to do so. Sand being
you have to transport it, right?
It's quite heavy stuff.
Very heavy stuff. And then you had, the biggest battery maker in the world, contemporary Amprex technology, known as Cattle here in the West, have been basically dictated or ordered by the Chinese government to halt a massive battery plant in, I think, in Texas, $5 billion project, which was supposed to have supplied batteries for Ford and Tesla EVs in the North America. So this is a massive slap in the face for the U.S. and the EV push. And Tesla have chosen Cattle to be its major partner because Cattle has exceeded in terms of technology Sony. So this is a big deal. And my major point here, and I think Steen also emphasized that, John, and then we can maybe have a discussion here, is that the overall theme is going to be deglobalization. I think the war in Ukraine and the tensions over Taiwan will eventually mean that the world will decouple again, and we will have deglobalization. That will put pressure on inflation. And Mester said it yesterday, we need a sustained lower level of month to month in the PCE call before the Fed is done hiking. And I put it in on slide 3. You can see that the 6 month average for the PCE call month to month is 0.4%. So, and I think we have to get it down to 0.2 before the Fed feels comfortable in its, feel comfortable to ease basically.
Yeah, a key point there. And actually for the near term, yeah, it's really interesting. This, of course, this visit by Pelosi to Taiwan and whether it triggers something more comprehensive going on here. I think the long arc of things is very much, as you say, risking this decoupling and this deglobalization of supply chains, et cetera. But I'm wondering, there was apparently, according to our analysts out in Hong Kong, a lot of focus in the Chinese media on Pelosi herself rather than maybe the Biden administration. And it's been pretty clear that the Biden administration wasn't super supportive of this move by her to visit Taiwan. So as long as that is the case, and then maybe given the CCP calendar this year and the move to put Xi Jinping into his third term, all these things, maybe to keep things just a bit quiet for now, and maybe the big follow through isn't until much later this year or early next year. That's just a guess, but that's the hopeful guess, at least for the short term. And then we mentioned the move in yields yesterday. So I have a couple of charts here on slide 4, just to indicate where we've gone from here, the 2-year and the 10-year. As noted, the 10-year popping over 20 basis points and even over 25 basis points, low to high intraday, a massive move. On the 10-year, we're not quite back into the old range, and I would argue we really need to fully close the gap, or not gap, but sort of reverse the down wave into 3% before we can argue that the lows are in here for this considerable correction off that 3.5% level we nearly saw in mid-June. The 2-year, less buffeted by the whole situation and still within range, so less of a focus technically on that one. But of course, as we feed into FX, that'll be important for the Japanese yen, which also weakened sharply on this move in treasury yields. I'll get that to that in a moment. I just want to look at maybe something interesting in gold and what is correlating to. So locally here, we have this very sort of tight correlation with the direction in yields as well. And gold, when they tick down, gold ticks up. And there tends to be a relationship with that in the dollar. So on slide 5, I have charted gold here in the black line. And then the blue line is the U.S. 10-year yield. And you can see that there's been a shift in the correlation there. Formerly, gold was going up, yields were going up, and importantly, inflation expectations were going up. That is the break-even, the 10-year break-even in sort of red you see there. And it really is that break-even level that is the important thing for gold. Not necessarily yields per se, but what the market's comfort level is or belief or forecast for the course of inflation. There's a very powerfully expressed view that this inflation is going to come down and that real yields have come back significantly higher. If that's a correlation, or if that's a conviction drops for whatever reason, we start to see, we continue to see high inflation prints despite some of the goods prices coming down, maybe due to wages, maybe due to services or all of the above, rents, et cetera. I think it can be very interesting for a potential for gold to reestablish an uptrend. But that is the key indicator there for gold, not necessarily yields per se, but how the market's convictions around real yields are shaping up for the more distant future. And similarly for dollar yen, which I show on slide 6, we did bounce very robustly, but this sell-off has been very considerable and it's really done a lot of damage to that dollar yen uptrend. So while if yields continue back higher, I think dollar yen would likely carve out a new range here. There's, again, a lot of damage done. And I wonder if we're in the longer term going to be shifting to the longer term concern that the Fed is, even if it does continue to hike rates, that would only be as a sort of chasing from behind effort around ongoing inflation and a loosening of that conviction on where inflation will end up being further down the road could actually wear and represent the final challenge and turnover into the dollar back to the downside. Too early to call that in something like Eurodollar. We're challenging back lower here, but we've been in a very tight range there for more than 2 weeks. 101 has to break in Eurodollar really for anything to be popping up on the radar technically. And I think we'll be testing either the 101 level or the 102.75 plus level in Eurodollar once we've got all the data this week out of the way from the US and traders can get back down to business there. Okay, we had an interesting company reporting yesterday, Peter. We previewed it a bit, Caterpillar. It looks like the market not enthused about what they were reporting in terms of their results for this previous quarter. Was that also in the outlook, in the guidance?
Yes. So Caterpillar was an interesting earnings release because the initial reaction also, from my side, when we look at the numbers and the way they communicated, they hit their numbers. They even exceeded on earnings because their margins were better than expected. They said the outlook for Latin America and North America was quite robust. They saw lower volumes in Asia, most specifically, predominantly in China. And then in the Euro / Middle East region, they also saw lower volumes. But then it was almost like that when the earnings call started that the stock was pushed down. I mean, Caterpillar is very, they don't want to put a lot of things in writing on China in their statements. But then in the subtleties and the color on the call was that it's actually not a very good situation in China. And they used a phrase that we don't really know where this thing lands, basically. And that is probably the maximum uncertainty you can convey to the market. So that was it. And this stock was down 5%. And we have to keep in mind that Caterpillar is really one of the key macro stocks that of size that the market is looking at. So this was from a macro point of view, it was a disappointment. And then if you look at the consumer side of things, we had Airbnb. Bookings were weaker than expected in Q2. The stock was actually higher. They had to do a big buyback program. The outlook is strong. They say that Q4 bookings are looking quite strong. And this I think is a big mistake, but they are expecting a lot of pent-up demand in Chinese outbound business, as they call it. I think this is a mistake. I don't think that is going to happen, to be honest. But that's my interpretation of what's going on. And then we've had Starbucks reporting weaker than estimated revenue yesterday, maybe a sign that the consumer is not willing to pay for overpriced coffee after all. And I think it ties into Just Eat as well here in Europe. But that's the slide I have, the chart on slide 7, Just Eat, the collapse there. They're taking a 3 billion impairment on their Grubhub investment. And then they're disappointing big on their first half year orders numbers. And I think the Just Eat chart here, I think you can, maybe I'm stretching the argument a little bit here, but I think it goes into the inflation argument that when we had these very low yields and the ease of globalization, we could get cheap goods from China, and we could have all these services like Uber and Just Eat, et cetera, providing the consumers with a lot of cheap goods. But look at the share price here. It has collapsed as the cost of capital has gone up. Inflation is here. And the only way for Just Eat to get back meaningfully for its shareholders is to, I think, hike prices. And that goes into inflation. So, but maybe I'm stretching the argument. And then BMW and Infineon both have reported pretty strong numbers and outlooks. So that's a positive for the car industry overall.
All right, and we have a number of earnings coming in here today. I see this Albemarle may be interesting on the lithium front. I haven't really read any lithium headlines of late, but certainly with the U.S. looking to subsidize EVs, you would think lithium is going to be a focus.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about lithium before on this podcast, and lithium prices have been going absolutely stratospheric. And I'm just looking up the price here on the Bloomberg terminal. So the July close is still at levels 10 times where they were at late 2020, and 10 times higher almost. So let's see with Albemarle. I'm not tracking the lithium too much, but in any case, for EV prices to come down, which is what Elon Musk wants, we need to have lower lithium prices. So Albemarle, I haven't highlighted it, so I'm glad you mentioned it. Let's see what they plan in terms of capital expenditures. But otherwise, I've highlighted Booking, interesting one given what we saw yesterday from Airbnb. Mercado Libre, potential barometer on consumer sentiment in Brazil and wider Latin America. And then Fortinet, the cybersecurity industry is being linked more and more, I think, to the defense side of things, given where geopolitical tensions are taking us. So, and as you can see with the little insert I've done here on slide 8, you can see that the market is extremely bullish on revenue growth of Fortinet. They are expecting almost 30% year-on-year growth rates in the next 3 quarters. I think that's pretty impressive in an economy that is slowing down. And I think it's bolstering the view that cybersecurity has become a defensive industry with growth characteristics. It's basically a necessity in this world to have. So we'll be watching that tonight.
There was also a big cyber attack of Taiwan. I heard in the reports something like 10 times the normal activity, of course, on Pelosi's visit of Taiwan. So yeah, it's a big issue. All right, let's look at the economic calendar. And as mentioned, we had that trio of Fed speakers out yesterday. We have a whole bevy of speakers out today. None of whom are voters, but of course they're eventually going to be voters. They're the regional Fed presidents. So look out for those. Again, it's the common theme in what they're saying, which was quite in evidence yesterday, that they're pushing back against the market's expectations. Although I think the market, to be fair, if the market has a view of how the economy is going to shape up, if the economy does shape up that way, that is how the Fed will react. The Fed is very reactive, I think, to incoming data, and they've even said that themselves. So it's a very difficult a fight, if you will, between what the Fed thinks, and the economy will shape up, and how the market believes it will shape up. So it'll have to be in the proof will have to be in that incoming data in the end. And so we got some incoming data yesterday in the form of the JOLTS job opening survey. That went in quite a bit weaker than expected. And of course, it's pre-pandemic, these would be record levels, but it's coming in quite rapidly. So that jobs market is cooling from extraordinary levels. The job openings at 10.7 million versus 11.3 the prior month. So if that pace of decline continues, of course, we might be getting back into the historical range in just a few months. So one to watch. Certainly what one to watch today is the ISM services, expected only a modestly weaker from the June level, as 53 spots, something or other expected for today. And I think the market leaning for a downside surprise after that preliminary S&P Global survey, it came in at 47, a real shocker, and suggesting the U.S. services sector is an outright contraction. I think we got that from the ISM services. It's going to reset the agenda today. So that's not what I'm expecting. But do we get a 51, 52, or do we get a 54? I think is still rather important for the ISM services today. And then we have the, of course, the U.S. jobs report on Friday. And I will hopefully, if I remember to, be looking at what many are making noise about, and that is the household survey. So the one that is used for the participation rate and the unemployment rate has been quite a bit weaker for a few months than the official non-farm payroll series. There's mixed evidence on how relevant that is, but it's still something maybe worth considering that, and in any case, these are tremendously difficult tasks to gather this data and for it to represent anything. As we saw in the many months post the pandemic outbreak, the data collection was poor and the revisions were very, very large for a number of months. So we'll have to wait for that and for, of course, the average hourly earnings. If there is to be inflation here, it certainly doesn't look like it's coming from the goods side right now. It'll be coming from rents, for example, and especially from wage price or more from the wage side, driving the rise, potential rise in the CPI and other measures of inflation from here. So watching that with interest through the end of the week. And yeah, that's it for today. Let's see how this market shapes up. I think it's really important to have those yields on your radar because of the move we saw yesterday and whether we see some follow-on weakness in treasuries driving yields higher still. We'll watch and see how things shape up, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.